Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat. I'm Lisa, and joining me today, I've got a full crew. We have Lauren, Steve, Sharpie, and Chris. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good, good. It's so good because we have special guest Len Testa with us of TouringPlans.com and the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World.
Hello. Yay! Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome, Len.
So thank you to my parole officer for letting me have this time.
That was really, really lucky.
So kind. So kind.
We just got a couple lucky of with cupcakes? Your timing.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. We wanted to talk to you tonight about, of course, touring plans, but also how you've seen the incorporation of the new Disney technology with the Magic Bands and My Magic Plus and Disney Experience, all the new stuff that's been coming out. How it's been affecting you. So how has touring plans changed because of all this new technology?
You know, it's probably one of the biggest educational challenges we've had to our readers since the advent of FastPass itself back in the late 90s. There's a lot of new technology involved. The rules are different, as you guys know, for FastPass Plus.
Changing daily.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, changing every 20 minutes. Plus, you know, just simple things like telling people how to navigate Disney's website to do things like set up a My Disney Experience account or to request fast passes. You know, that changes like every week, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that process down for people and communicating that out to our readers without using 100 pages to do so. Was really the big challenge. We actually wrote in the new edition, the one coming out in August, all the steps needed to make a FastPass reservation for your first day. It ended up being like 15 steps, mm-hmm. start to finish. And then, because, there's some people who have, you need an email account to link to My Disney Experience, right? And a lot of people have email mm-hmm. through work, but, their primary email is through work. But unless you can access that email account when you're in the middle of the park, in case you forget your password at a kiosk, that's not going to do you any good. So we have to tell people how to set up, Gmail or something like that, and then that they should link it to their phone. And
I never
and
even
so
thought
on.
Of that.
Yeah,
so there's I do that.
Yeah, so consider the readership. We've got hundreds of thousands of people who read the book. Some of them are going to have that situation. In fact, a lot of them do. So we went through that process, and then we had to explain like what if you're linking in friends and family, what kind of information do you need from them? What kind of information do you need from your own trip ahead of time? So things like before you request your fast passes, we figured you should have a general idea of where you're going every day, the times you're going to eat, the times you're going to take naps. You should have the email account. You should be able to access it from your phone. We have this whole list of prerequisites, and we're looking at this and. Bob emails me. He's like, "Are you serious? You need all of this?" I'm like, dude, we're just getting started.
No. It's like a whole nother book. You have like unofficial guide part two.
It's its own book, yeah.
I've actually seen them on Amazon. I've seen people who have done, these mini guides to FastPass Plus, and that's all the book covers is FastPass Plus.
Well, those are already obsolete.
Yeah, right. You have to change
true.
The screen prints. So that was the big challenge. The second part was. Well, two things. One is the main thing was the touring plans. So we had to adapt the touring plans for that. Fortunately, we had about a 2-year head start on Disney, knowing that Disney was going to implement FastPass Plus and do tiering. So it took us about a month or so to incorporate the concept of tiering into our online touring plan software. Have you guys used the software online? Oh, cool. So there are two ways you can approach a touring plan. One is if you already know your FastPass reservations, if you've already gone out and made reservations, you can enter those into the touring plan and we'll work around it, just like the old FastPass system. You tell me you need to be at Space Mountain between 9 and 10 a.m., Big Thunder between 1 and 2, and Peter Pan between 3 and 4, I can do that. That's no problem. But the more difficult thing was for people who don't know which fast passes to ask for, right? And I think that's most people, right? What are the best fast passes for me? Well, it depends on, what you want to see and when you're going to arrive. So we changed the touring plan software so that it'll make suggestions for you based on the attractions that you want to see and the time that you're going to be in the park. And that was a little more challenging because we had to figure out the tiering system, and obviously we can't make suggestions that don't work for the tier. So that took a little bit of work. to do. But again, we had a head start on it, so we were able to get the programming done even before Disney had actually announced the tiering. We were ready for it. The other thing, and the thing I think that you guys have you guys been to the parks recently?
Yeah.
Relatively.
Last couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, so one of the things that
that's
we've seen...
That's pretty recently,
that's
Steve.
Pretty that's not as recent as like...
We're there all the time.
Yeah,
we
I was just
problem.
There yesterday, but no, it's been a while.
Yeah. What time is it? 8:40? Yeah, I definitely... Yeah. So one of the things that we've seen, and you guys have seen this on our blog if you've read it, is that Fastpass is really redistributing people throughout the park.
I just read that on your blog. I thought that was fascinating.
I'm really confident in the results. We got a lot of positive feedback for it. I know for a fact that people in Disney's industrial engineering team read the blog, so we sent them a link to it and just said, you know, hey, we think you guys are doing a great job here. Thanks for the effort. But so it's bringing down the wait times at headliner attractions, things like, you know, Space Mountain, Expedition Everest, you know, all the big name rides. It's and the wait times at some of the secondary attractions are going up a little bit. So if you're somebody who goes to the parks and only wants to ride headliners, right, you only want to ride thrill rides, then Fastpass Plus is a net positive for you because you're waiting in line less. And that was shocking to me because, you know, everything that I've heard from Disney for the first couple of years, none of it was about reducing your wait in line with Fastpass Plus. I've seen the internal documentation on it. I've seen the business plan. None of it said anything about reducing your wait in line. In fact, the stuff that I saw said that they were perfectly willing to accept increases in the standby wait time as long as it got more people using Fastpass Plus. And the opposite happened.
Hmm. So, Len, are you talking for standby lines or?
Yeah, so standby lines, yeah. So for standby lines.
Or a combination of the two.
Basically redistributing it across all of the park.
So in Epcot's a classic example. You'd have these, you know, 2-hour waits at Soarin', these 2-hour waits at Test Track, and there'd be literally no one in line at Journey into Imagination. Now, you know, Journey into Imagination is a 10 or 15 minute wait, but there's a 10 or 15 minute less wait at Soarin' and Test Track because of it.
Hmm. Yeah.
So if you don't care about Journey into Imagination, you know, net benefit to you, right? Yeah. If you just want to ride Soarin' and Test Track, you're cool. And if you want to do a comprehensive tour, I think it's probably still break even, maybe be a slight benefit to you. There's actually a slight benefit because you don't have to walk back and forth to get Fastpass, paper Fastpasses anymore. So overall,
that was
this
half
probably
the fun.
Is. I know, right?
Kind of helps with the turkey legs.
But that was, you know, so figuring out the impact of that took us a long time. We sort of saw it start to happen in February. We reconfirmed it in April where we had seen, you know, more movement towards certain attractions. And then we just re-ran this the study, I think, in the June 20th. And we're pretty solid on that. And that's remarkable. I mean, to me, that's like the single greatest accomplishment Disney's done since like 2005.
Well, I think you get the fast passes and you've taken all this time and effort to actually make the reservation. And then you get there and you're like, I'm going to go on these three rides. And you're used
committed.
To be, yeah, you used to be like, oh, I got some fast passes. It says I have to be there at 1, but they'll let me in at 8:00 tonight. So... And if I don't use them, I'll just hand them to somebody.
That was how I used to do it.
Yeah, and then, or I'll come back tomorrow and use it, or I'll just give it to somebody on the way out. And now it's like, I only have 3. I can only really get 3 that I, you know.
They're more valuable.
And I'm going to go, because I have a reservation, and I got to be there.
You know what, let me ask you, kind of based on what he just said. So, when all these Fast Passes came out, the Fast Pass Plus system,
mm-hmm.
We, as season goers... felt that we were getting gypped or slowed down. I don't want to say screwed, but I'm going to say screwed. So we were getting screwed because we knew how to work the FastPass system to our advantage. And I wanted to know what you think. Is this going to benefit frequent goers in the long haul?
So it depends on the ride you want to ride. The original, the original set of requirements where you could only get 3, that wasn't good. Although you could still argue that if you chose your 3 properly, and that's where having the software was really helpful. You could mitigate virtually all of the bad parts of the three ride restriction just by choosing the right way and getting there early. Now that you can get more. yeah, you're still fine. Although the one thing I think is it's still a screwy rule is you can only get your fourth, you know, and subsequent fast passes after the last one has expired.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't implement the 2-hour rule like they did in the old fast pass, because no one should ever get a fast pass for an evening fireworks show, because you'll never get any other fast passes for the rest of the day.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know why they didn't implement that. I mean, I suspect it's because the programming to do it was so convoluted that they just don't want to ask the developers to do any more.
And it may come.
Yeah, yeah, it may. It's so far down the list of things that they
want
to do.
Right now it works. It's not a priority. I get that. But you're right. If you opt for a nighttime show,
yeah,
you get three fast passes that day.
That day, that's it. Yeah, and one of them is really got two and then the fireworks.
And I've always wondered if the...
I don't think you're really going to get the fast pass later on for a nighttime show if you wait so it's kind of a choice, right?
Yeah, you would do the two. So you'd get two rides, and then if you made your third advanced fast pass reservation for fireworks, that's it for you for the rest of the day.
Right, you're
but
done.
But it's not such a bad system if you go into the whole... If you plan your Disney trip where you have 2 days at the Magic Kingdom, and one day you go ahead and follow that nighttime plan where you... Probably your second day, you take that nighttime sacrifice and have your two fast passes, and then the other day you start with, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning fast passes and see how quickly you can use them up and get more and more and more.
Yeah.
Another good way to do it is probably if it's a half day park, like you're arriving late in the day and you're only doing a half day at night, that's probably a good time to do something like that.
If
but I don't think I'd
waste
it otherwise. They're valuable.
It's true.
Right, but with water park days or Downtown Disney days or even resort days, like you're saying, when you plan on going for just a partial day and when you're there for a good number of days, those tickets get cheap. So why not? It is worth it to go in for, you know, 4 hours and try and jam them all in. And there's no reason you couldn't schedule your three fast passes for the evening hours.
Right.
But that works. Good work.
And so one of the other benefits we see from it, and I think we said this in the book, is if you think about who Disney's best customers are, not the annual pass holders, but the people who are showing up on vacation, they're people who are staying on site, especially at a deluxe resort. And most of those people, 75% of the people who visit a Disney theme park are not there when the park opens. So... For things like, and they typically arrive around 11 a.m. For them, they would never get a Toy Story Mania Fast Pass. They would never get an Anna and Elsa Fast Pass if it was the paper version. They'd all be gone, right? So what Fast Pass Plus allows Disney to do is to offer some of the best Fast Passes to their best customers, right?
That's
the people who are staying in their resorts and the people who are.
I love that about that, by the way, because I'm not a rope drop person.
Well, and I think it gives an advantage to the rope drop people, a huge advantage.
Yeah, you can still get the three, and then you can get more, right?
Well,
yeah,
and smaller lines in general, smaller crowds.
Yeah.
Because no one has this
need to get
into... You have
less people trying to get there,
right? Right, you don't have to get there early to get the fast passes that you want. You can be leisurely, and you can even change your fast passes if you decide I want to be even more leisurely.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we should actually run a commercial to tell people to sleep in more. It'll give us the park earlier.
You know what? Please.
No.
You're feeling sleep drowsy.
Exactly. You know what? Isn't the bed comfortable? We could run it like during the Today Show. Stay in bed. Order room service. You know what you need? A couple more hours of rest.
Play a little bit of Peter Pan's music in the background.
Exactly. Oh, funny.
Can I kind of go back to something? So if you saw the internal documentation and it wasn't about decreasing wait times, which I have to admit, that's what I thought it was about, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist. What is FastPass Plus about? Is it about making me spend more money with that magic band? Because if so, that worked really well. Yeah.
So the end result was that you would schedule so much of your vacation around Disney that you wouldn't go anywhere else in Central Florida.
Oh my gosh. It totally makes sense.
And
it does, you know, when you think
which
about
most
it.
People
well,
that
and
stay on property don't anyway. It's too hard.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
It's what Magical Express does too, right? So this is just another. Magical Express was evil genius. I mean, whoever thought of it, brilliant idea. Brilliant.
Let us handle all your transportation. You don't need to rent a car.
And
we'll take
people are so amazed. They're like, oh, wait, it's included? Really? Even if I don't book my flight through Disney?
Yeah.
Like, they're amazed by that.
I always tell clients, because they're like, are you kidding? That's free. And I'm like, oh, believe me. Yes, it is.
Well, yeah, free. But you won't be able to avoid a $30 plate of pasta in Epcot. But yeah, if you want to use the word free in quotes, absolutely cool with me.
Oh. Does this kind of brings out the snark in people, doesn't it? You know, it's kind of like, you know, here, stay. Have a lovely time. Well, get on our bus. Yeah.
It's so much more expensive to go down the street to Universal because you don't have a car because you did the Magical Express. You already have the tickets, and you've already spent 60 days in advance planning every single day's rides. So you're like, I've got these rides that I've committed to. And to go to Universal, it's $100 a person plus transportation, and I don't have any fast passes.
Plus, you don't get Express Pass because you're not staying on site.
Yep.
Right.
But, you know, this is good and bad because – I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, so basically, when I have done FastPass Plus, I noticed that because I'm like a crazy park hopper, like I have park ADD or something, and I'm in one park and then the other and blah, blah, blah. And I did notice that it kind of does make me more committed to one park, and it kind of takes longer. Is that the whole concept behind that? Like, you know, not just day to day to day that I'm planning things out, but just even that day kind of has me more committed than I would normally be.
The thing that they like about you being committed is this. This is actually, I think, the single biggest benefit of FastPass Plus is that it allows Disney to know exactly how to staff each of the parks. So what we've heard prior to FastPass Plus is that on any given day, the staff level at Disney, the number of the employees that they have in the park, is generally plus or minus 30% of what they need. So some days they're overstaffed by 30%. Some days they're understaffed by 30%. And it's because they don't have a really great handle on how many people are going to be in each park, and therefore they don't know what the demand is going to be in each ride every day. So one of the huge benefits to Disney for FastPass Plus is not only are you telling them 60 days in advance, I will be at the Magic Kingdom, but you're telling them, and I will be at Space Mountain exactly between 10:45 a.m. and 11:45 a.m.
It is pretty good.
Yeah, so if you think about two thirds of their operating cost is labor. So by fine tuning these models, it allows them to decrease the waste that they have, you know, the inefficiencies that they have in their staffing schedules.
That's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now let me ask you a question. Has that actually helped touring plans with fine tuning their numbers and making, like, you guys, your numbers to me were always very accurate anyway. But like, has the fast passes helped you guys with being able to figure out how crowded parks are going to be based on those numbers? Are you able to access that information now?
We don't have access to Disney's numbers, but we get reports every day that tell us how our predictions did against what actually happened in the parks yesterday. So we're looking at things like we have 4 million users on the site and more than 100. Yeah, thank you. And more than 115,000 subscribers. Thank you all. And they're entering wait times into the site constantly. We're getting somewhere between 6 and 10,000 a day. So we generally have a really good view of what the posted wait times were with all the attractions. So what we're able to do on that is, through some really sophisticated modeling software, figure out what the wait times are going to be. So right now we're running, on average, we can guess the average wait time between 10 and 5 at every attraction within 6 minutes, which is, when you think about that, that's insane.
Wow.
And actually, we post these on the, if you guys are subscribers, just go look at the charts for each of the attractions. Like, you can pick Space Mountain's chart for yesterday, and we'll show you, you know, literally in 5 minute increments what we predicted and what it was. So all the data is there. It's all transparent. We're very clear about it. So yeah, so we're really happy with FastPass Plus because the modeling software that we use picked up on the change back in January, and it's been really effective for us in making predictions. So we're really happy with where we're at on that.
Sweet. That's awesome. I mean, I kind of figured it was, but I was just curious.
Yeah, it's crazy. So the one downside to it is, it's the same number of people in the park, right? So if you're looking at things like restaurant lines or, you know, during this fall, you'll see food and wine booths that are, you know, probably really, really crowded. The same number of people in the park. Actually, it's going up slightly every year. But the wait times are down. So you sort of get this disconnect. You know, you see a lot of people in the park. And I guess when you're walking, you know, through Fantasyland, it might feel crowded, but the wait times are lower. And that's difficult for people to reconcile. Like we're saying, you know, I am 100% certain wait times are lower at the headliner attractions. And then people in the parks are going, but dude, it's wall to wall here. You know, I can't walk. I'm like, yeah, I know, but
you're they're all in the street. They're not on the rides.
Yeah. So they're more evenly distributed throughout the park, and that's why you see more people. So there's this sort of disconnect between what we know is happening with the wait times and what people are perceiving, you know, or feeling in the parks. So we still have to explain that to people. And a lot of people just don't believe it, right? A lot of people say, I don't believe that the wait times are down because, look, this park is insanely crowded.
All right. I'm sorry. I just thought of a question because my mind kind of wanders. We do that here. So if there was someone on every available seat on every ride in the Magic Kingdom, how many people could be accommodated?
I will get that answer for you. I don't know. I can find out.
I'd like to know. Because that would tell me how many people are not being accommodated on a ride.
So I'll give you a roundabout answer at this. So Disney occasionally gives us attendance figures. Like we can ask them, you know, on this specific day, how many people were in the Magic Kingdom. And about half the time they'll actually tell us.
Okay.
And what we do is we use that to calibrate our models. We'll say, this was the set of wait times for this particular day. And we'll tell our models, this means that this many people were in the parks. So we can sort of back into that. And the thing that we found is that at any given time, no more than a third of the people in the parks are on rides. So it means two-thirds of the people are walking around somewhere. They're in shops. They're walking around the lands. They're
eating.
Drinking wine. Yeah, something else. They're not. Well, they're
wine.
Not. So in line. No, we count in line. In line and on the ride is the same thing. So they're in an attraction. Okay. Two-thirds of the people aren't at any given time.
Well, okay, if you include the line, I buy that.
And that's part of, I guess, FastPass Plus, because you're like, okay, I'm going to wait. I got another hour to kill because I've got this next reservation. So let's go get a snack. Let's go buy something in the shop.
Yeah, so if you're in Future World, and you've got 25 minutes before your test track, FastPass, you know, your choices are go explore Interventions, you can't ride Universe of Energy in 25 minutes.
Yep.
Maybe Mission Space, or let's go over to Mouse Gear.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably right increasing sales on snacks and merchandise and everything else because you're hanging out waiting for your.
That's true.
We've heard the magic bands are increasing spending too, which I think is, again, evil genius type thing.
Len, Chris can attest to that.
Chris can totally attest to that.
It's terrible. Like, I'm the cheapest mother. I never, and we've said this like 50 times, so I apologize, but to anyone who's listening, but I'm the cheapest mom. I never buy my kids anything. And when we went in April, it was the first time I'd really used the bands with them. And I just kept buying things. And I got home and my husband was like looking at the account and he said, "What did you do?" I have no idea. It was just so easy. Boop, boop,
I was
boop.
Yeah,
she was a little button in.
I remember we were over waiting for Soren, and they each said, "I want a stuffed animal." And you're like, "Okay, go get it."
I'm like, wow,
Chris.
I know.
That's not a wristband. That's a mind control device. Wow.
It is a mind control device.
Evil genius, I'm telling you.
It really is. I feel kind of bad now that I think about it. I still like it.
But here's the question. Will it happen again next time?
Oh, no, absolutely not. My husband's already given me the word. We're going next week. And he was like, by the way,
I'm in charge of your magic.
He's not going to give you charging privileges on yours, Chris.
I know.
He's going to cut you off.
He'll give it to the 11-year-old, but not me, because Eric would never spend anything.
Buy your mother a drink.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, come mommy here. A drink.
Be a good boy and go buy your mommy a drink.
That's funny.
Cute.
Now, are there rides now that you think you would get a fast pass for that in the past you would never have to get a fast pass for, but now you may be recommending people get a fast pass for, I don't know, something that you never used to?
Yeah, there's a few. Spaceship Earth in Epcot is one. That's pretty popular. Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, that's one that's really gotten very popular with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, Haunted Mansion was sort of on the border. You know, I think it. You know, you could have used FastPass for it before when it, you know, back in the day when it had it, but lines are definitely longer at it now too.
Small World. I think Small World has much longer lines.
I usually wait until the very end of the day to go on that, just because the lines will drop a little bit. But yeah, those have gone up. Pretty much anything that there was a continuous loading attraction or a high capacity attraction. The weights have probably gone up because Disney's, you know, pushing more people towards those.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are all good examples. Dinosaur too, which was weird. I have this own little pet theory about Dinosaur.
Huh.
There are so few attractions that have Fastpass Plus in the Animal Kingdom, and Dinosaur, because it starts with the letter D, is generally at the top of the Fastpass list.
Uh-huh.
More people, because you know it's buried in the back of the park. No, most people were not, you know, trekking all the way back there to get Fastpasses. But now that it's on your mobile phone and it's literally at the top of the screen if it's alphabetized, people are like, oh, Dinosaur, it's a thrill ride. Let's go on. It looks good. So wait times have gone up there.
Huh. Makes sense.
Yeah. That's my own little pet theory.
I love mind games.
Dinosaur is very buried.
Yeah, it's way back, yeah.
Not only is it in the corner of the park, but it's also behind another area.
Yeah, behind Dinoland. Yeah, that's a nice little walk, the Cretaceous Trail thing right there. Yeah, super nice.
Yep.
I like how they did ferns back there too, which are supposed to be like the most primitive of plants. It's really well detailed. And plus that water fountain right there is some of the coldest water you'll have in the park.
That's because no one knows it's there.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
We used to, back in the day when there were paper Fastpass machines and before we had a bunch of users, we would actually walk around the park with specially designed notepads. And we would write down in 15-minute increments or 30-minute increments the wait times and the posted Fastpass return times for every attraction in the park. And we would send literally groups of people into the parks to do this. And the path that we took through Dinoland was to go right straight down the front of Dinosaur, make a left on the Cretaceous Trail, you know, that little covered area where the water fountain is, and walk through the rest of Dinoland past the Chester and Hester's and grab all the Fastpass. So you'd essentially walk through that little shop right there that's right on the end of Chester and Hester's because there's a little bit of air conditioning there.
Nice.
And in the summer, that felt really good. But yeah, that's why I know like all the plants in Cretaceous Trail right there.
Okay.
Whatever, yeah.
What have you found the feedback to be from people about the whole new technology thing?
Yeah, they're coming around. Initially, it was all negative, and I think a lot of that was just you know, people are resistant to change, especially
change.
Yeah, like that for the Disney community was a lot. The but there are some legitimate complaints about it. There's a small subset of people who absolutely hate the idea of being tethered to technology on vacation. So people who don't have smartphones who are really looking just to, you know, disconnect when they're away from the office. Those people hate this.
Yeah.
And that's valid, right? I can kind of see that.
Well, I think with maybe some older people, too, that have just a normal cell phone, they're not into the apps and all that, might not even have a cell phone, and they book a trip to Disney, and they're behind the eight ball from the minute they book.
Yeah, not only can they not, you know, if they don't want to use the technology, they don't want to get online to book the fast passes. You know, they're at the mercy of people at the kiosks to get them. The kiosks have long lines. You still need an email account. You need My Disney Experience. It's all. Bob and I actually, last time we were in the parks together in May, we went through the entire process of signing up, and we pretended like we were people who didn't actually have an email account. And the cast members were, you know, just didn't believe us that we were, you know, we didn't have an email account. I'm like, dude, you will get people that don't have email accounts, and you're gonna have to walk them through this. So, but those people really hate it.
So, did they actually walk you through setting up an email account?
They sent us to there was a guest services area in Town Square Theater, like at the very beginning. And they walked us over there, and then people walked us through that process. They didn't actually walk us through the process of signing up for email, but they said, you know, you can go back to your hotel. You know, we were at the Contemporary to use the business center to create an email account. You know, do that. So they walked us through what we had to do. They wouldn't do it there. They're not set up for it. But yeah, think about that. You'd have to leave the option was leave the park, go back to your hotel, set up an email account, right? You know, no one's going
to
do that.
Yeah. Well, I had the park when the fast passes first came out. I walked all the way to the park, and they had not attached my ticket to my band at the front desk after we spent, you know, like an hour there getting everything set up. And then I had to walk all the way back.
All the way back.
Because they couldn't do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, originally it was, then you would show up and your fast passes wouldn't be on there or they'd be on, it was, but they've got a lot of that fixed. The only thing we run into issues with is as a group, because we like to go as a big group.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll all go down there and trying to get all of us tied together.
Wait a second. Who runs into this problem?
Lauren does it for us. The problem is like we'll show up and then we'll meet other people there. So there'll be some annual pass holders that'll be the, hey, I'll meet you tomorrow. And then you'll have some other friends that'll show up. And before you know it, you've got 10 people that aren't on your FastPass plan because you haven't all booked it together. And in the past, you could just run up, grab some fast passes at a machine, go
the
eat.
Spontaneity is out of it.
So these people, you're like, well, hey, I'll see you later. The 8 of us are going to go ride this ride and we're going to miss it.
Yeah.
And so that you can't just have a group of friends that show up.
Well, and the problem with that too is once you separate for one ride, it's almost impossible to get hooked back up because then everybody's always off.
Yeah. So that, so you lose that piece. Yeah. So the spontaneity of it, like Lauren was saying, is kind of gone on that regard.
I think that's a loss. I think that's like a lot of people go on vacation, as Lynn said earlier, to get away from technology, and to kind of live in the moment. This completely circumvents that. It's like they're forcing you to live in the moment to be able to experience, or forcing you not to live in the moment because they need better numbers and more accurate numbers for staffing and other purposes. So, there are aspects that I like, but I really do think it has taken a lot of the spontaneity out of a Walt Disney World.
Yeah, but Disney was always, in my opinion anyway, was never the vacation that was the relaxing vacation. And honestly, the more organized you were always with Disney, the better your experience was with Disney. So I think it's actually just taking it and making and almost forcing people into that planning so that they get the full experience out of it.
Yeah, that's I really can see it both ways. I can.
So I don't think it's bad necessarily. I there's some aspects I don't love about it, but for the most part, I think it's actually doing a great thing.
I think for your
I don't know.
I kind of like it.
Now, do you like it as an annual pass holder going, or do you like it as every 3.5 years vacation goer going?
I'm there every 6 weeks, at least. And most of my trips now, because my daughter's old enough, she's 16, she's bringing a friend, and because they're teenagers, no one ever gets up at 7 o'clock in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good for them because they can sleep late and still go on all the classic rides, and I can go to the park later. Earlier and still get done whatever I need to get done, which is really good. But I think overall it's reducing wait times on the headliners.
Yeah,
they're addressing the 75% of people who aren't there in park open. That good enough. There are things I don't like about it. There are things I think, frankly, are a little creepy with the monitoring, but not creepy. But the tendency is, when a big company collects data on you, they're gonna use it to sell you things. That's just what. That's what they do, right?
Yeah.
And so that can be intrusive. So
I don't think it's marketing. Curiosity.
Marketing at its best.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Everyone's sputtering. Lauren, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That was Chris.
No, that was Chris.
Oh, I thought Lauren sputtered too. Chris.
Nope.
Well, I actually, we have some questions from people who posted on the Facebook page. Do you mind answering those?
You have to ask Angie's.
Speaking of manipulating people's emotions, go ahead. Facebook.
I know, right? Facebook? Absolutely.
I'm so sad.
So this actually comes from Wendy, and it's not on topic with FastPass Plus, but it's related to touring plans. She writes on Friday, December 26th, the crowd levels at Hollywood Studios show a 4 on touring plans. Mm-hmm. Although I love it, that doesn't seem correct given all the levels, other levels that week. Could Len please confirm that?
So generally for any kind of question like this, it's just go back and look at what the previous day was, what the same day was in the previous year, making sure that you get, and it's all available on the site. So so if you click like any day on the crowd calendar, you know, it will show you the prediction for that day, but also works in reverse. So you can see any day in the past. So the 27th, right?
Yes.
All right.
I'm sorry, the 26th.
No, 26th.
The 26th.
Yeah,
whatever
the 26th of 2014.
Yeah. So it would be the 27th for last year.
I didn't realize you could go back.
Yeah, you could go back.
I didn't either.
That's awesome. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, so
just
that looks
as
like...
an aside, I can't tell you how many of my clients use this. Touring plans, it's like their Bible.
It's my Bible.
It is. We use it constantly.
Well, and that's another good thing. If Len, if you can go over like what like a high level for people that don't know, because I'm sure we have listeners that don't know what touring plans is and how they get to it and what it, you know, what the advantages are. And...
There you go, being smart again, Steve.
There you go. All right, cool.
So wait, do you look at the exact same day or you look at the same day of the week?
You look at the same, so that would be like the third Friday. So actually, that's right. That is off a little bit. Let me go back and look at it and see if we've updated this.
Uh-oh.
Here. That's
scandal.
Fine.
Scandalous.
Yeah, you're right. We do. Yeah, that's strange. All right, I'll ask the stats team on that. That does look a little low.
Wow. That's way to go, Wendy.
All right, I will get back to you guys with an answer on that. Let me type in something in my stats team right now.
Because the funny thing is, you never around a holiday, you never know where the crowds are going to end up. They may start somewhere, but especially if the Magic Kingdom ends up closing to entering guests, you never know where people are going to go once turned away from the Magic Kingdom.
Oh. Yeah. I just got a response from my statistician. We're updating the crowd calendar tonight. There you go.
Right,
and we're increasing some of the levels at the studios.
Talk about real time. How awesome
is
that?
That's impressive. I don't know if it covers that particular day, but I've asked them to look at that particular day. They're actually working on it right now.
And that's a good point on...
When are we releasing this podcast? It could actually be corrected by the time we're done.
We're like a couple
probably
weeks.
Probably 3 weeks.
Two weeks.
Yeah.
Two
yeah,
weeks.
It'll be fixed by then. Yeah, we're releasing it tomorrow morning sometime.
Perfect. Now,
okay, we actually have.
Go ahead, Chris.
We actually have a really good one. The next one is
We're finishing up on that. So you're really for any day, go back and look at what it was the previous year, and if there really is an issue like this one for December 27th, where something does look a little off, send us an email, and we'll take a look at it. You know, generally when we're really wrong on something like that, it's a simple typo like we screwed up the park hours, or we forgot to, you know, it's something really,
human
really,
nature,
you know,
yeah,
basic like that. And we try and automate that error checking as much as possible, but you, now, know, you figure how, in any given
how
day.
How often
there's,
do you update those?
The models for the individual attractions, like when we try and predict what the wait times are for an individual attraction, those are updated. We're probably updating a couple of them a week just because we're getting new data and we're testing new things. The crowd calendar itself, I think this is the second big update we've had since we launched it in November. Mm-hmm. And so this one, obviously, Disney just completely redid its Extra Magic Hour schedule. We're taking into account now the trends that we're seeing with FastPass Plus and things like that. So this is the second big push we've had since November. But so every couple of months.
Okay, so this is from Angie, and I actually have had this question myself.
Me too. I think
wondered about
question.
This. She says, if you park hop, do you recommend getting FastPass Plus for the first or second park of the day?
Ooh, that's a good question. We when FastPass first came out, we told people, get it for the second park, especially if you're going to rope drop the first park.
That's what I did.
Because you can get through your headliners. And again, if you're hopping to like the studios, there's no way you're ever going to get a FastPass for Toy Story Mania. And you know, and the times that might be available for like Rock and Roller Coaster would probably be terrible. So we used to recommend that. Now that you've got though, you know, you can get multiple FastPasses in a given park. You know, after you get your first three, Toy Story Mania is still never going to be available, but Tower of Terror might be. You know, so it sort of depends on the attractions that you want to get. If you want to see Anna and Elsa in the Magic Kingdom, right, you pretty much don't have a choice. If you want to do Enchanted Tales with Belle, if you want to do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, you know, and you're going to the Magic Kingdom in the morning, those are your three, right? And then, you know, you're going to, let's say, the studios, you can figure out what's left once you get there and do the best you can. But each of those attractions are going to be, you know, anywhere from an hour and a half to a 5 hour wait standby. So this, you know, no line like is going to be that long at the studios or, you know, any other park. By the way, have you guys done Anna and Elsa at the Magic Kingdom?
No, Chris and I tried to get a fast pass for August, but we couldn't get one.
I had one for a couple weeks ago, but I was all by myself and I thought it would be creepy.
It would have been creepy.
I didn't go.
It is the single greatest character greeting, meet and greet in any Disney park. I will tell you right now, it is the most amazing thing. The cast members that do that are the best character meet and greet for Anna and Elsa ever in the history of ever.
Well, and why is that? Is it because of the hype or because they're really good at what they're doing?
They're really good. So they put so much energy. So I took my daughter again, who's a teenager. We were in Disneyland in April. And she actually waited 4.5 hours standby to see Anna and Elsa. I'm like, I've had relationships not last this long, right? 4.5 hours, but she did it. And you know, people came and went in line. You know, parents switched with other parents. We brought people food. Other people brought water. You know, we held spots while they went to bed. But you know, 4 hours, and it was great. And the reason why the line is so long is you get like between 1 and 2 minutes with Anna and Elsa. They really spend a lot of time, you know, talking with you. And it was great. And it sort of carved it out of like the old Pinocchio Village House gift shop. It's the thing, the whole entire room can't be 15 by 15. It's tiny. But when we were in World, we went down for the 24-hour event and waited 90 minutes in line with a fast pass for that. But again, you're getting all this quality time. So we had my daughter had mentioned to the attendant right before we went in that this is her second time seeing Anna and Elsa because we'd seen her in Disneyland. And so, you know, like 15 minutes later when we get in, Anna comes running up to Hannah and jumps on her and says, "Oh, it's so good to see you again. And, you know, the last time I saw you was like in the Kingdom of California," or whatever she said. And, you know, Hannah's mind just blew her mind. And, you know, she was jumping on Hannah and she was so excited to see her. It's really so personalized. And there was so much energy. This was like 1 o'clock in the morning. That's the time our fast pass was. You know, I couldn't imagine. Well, first of all, you can't do it in a Mickey Mouse costume, right? Because you can't jump around like that. But for those cast members to be that enthused at that time of night, you know, and to personalize the experience so much it was amazing. So I was really happy with that.
All right. So Brittany writes, for people who used to be commando planners with FastPass Legacy, any advice on how to use FastPass Plus to the best of our planning ability, and how to make the change without making us nervous?
Oh, wow.
It's kind of an esoteric kind of question.
Yeah. So, you know, with the old FastPass system, you used to be able to walk up to a ride and look at the wait time and say, okay, it's, you know, 45 minutes for Big Thunder. Do I really want to wait 45 minutes for it? And then make a decision about whether to use FastPass. Now you kind of have to know in advance what the wait times are going to be. Because if you walk up to Big Thunder and the wait is 45 minutes and there are no FastPass Plus opportunities left, you're out of luck. And that could happen at, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, right, on a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to get the FastPass reservations, you know, 60 days in advance. That would give you some peace of mind regarding, at least for your favorite attractions, that you're not going to wait in a very long line for them. So for things like, again, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, if that's really important to you to ride because it's new, or, you know, your family loves Big Thunder or Splash Mountain or Space Mountain, you know, those are the obvious attractions to pick. And once you've got those locked down, what I would say is, you know, pick your three favorite rides or the rides that are going to be the longest waits. And then once you've got those set for fast passes, you can get more once you're in the park. And then, you know, then play it by ear after that. I think that's the simplest thing to do.
Do you think more people will stay on property to use this to get the advantage of booking 60 days in advance?
It's a good question. You know, I I used to think that that's, you know, that's what they were doing. Disney wanted you to stay in the hotels. I think the large component of what they're getting from Magic Bands is the increased spending. Obviously, they want more people to stay in the hotels because they want to increase the occupancy. But I think they would be just as happy if you didn't stay on site, but you ended up spending more because of the Magic Band. But yeah, I think ultimately they want more people to stay on site. There's didn't Marriott announce that they were starting construction on the Western Way hotels that they had talked about? Remember back in like 2007, Disney had announced right before literally 3 days before the financial crash.
It was like Flamingo Crossing or something like that.
So Marriott's going ahead now on building two of those hotels. So
yeah, there's a whole new shopping area on that end of the property that's supposed to be hitting construction sometime soon.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, the permits actually got filed a couple months ago, I think. Yeah. But that was, I mean, what, 7 years ago they started talking about that?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think Disney will see that. Whether they're going to build another hotel, I don't know. But they could be just as happy getting a cut of, every Courtyard by Marriott stay that people have too on those hotels.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think that, do you know actually if, Disney releases Fast Passes at 60 days and then they release Fast Passes again at 30 days?
Yep.
Do they release more at that 30-day point?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would suspect, I don't know.
I think they have to.
You think they do?
I think so, because for example, I was down there a few weeks ago and we had a big group of people and one of our people couldn't get onto Seven Dwarfs. He'd been trying and trying and trying and he was able to get it that morning. You know, I think they release them.
I know they release some in the morning.
Possibly.
They might be fine-tuning so they might fine-tune the actual allocation. Yeah, that's probably a good point.
Release a few more. They have to release some more. People at 30 days are getting nothing.
Well, and I think that must be easy to find out because all you'd really have to do is sort of track it, for when things pop up, maybe.
Yeah, I guess check it at that 30-day.
So get on that if you could.
The other thing too is, people are. The other thing now is, people are constantly canceling or changing their Fastpass reservations.
Yeah, I just got a Seven Dwarfs for 10:40 a.m.
So that's the other thing too is that the stuff you see popping in and out of existence in terms of availability could just be people releasing their existing fast passes as well. So it's sort of a dynamic market that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would love to see Disney give you a point system. This is my dream. It's insanely complicated, but it's my dream. So they give you 10 points a day, or let's say 12 points a day. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train might start off at 6 because it's a high demand. But something like Journey to Imagination with Figment is 1.
You're killing me. Stop talking.
It's already over my head.
Don't know.
Just think about it, right? I mean, all fast passes aren't created equally, right?
No,
they're not.
So it would be like money, basically.
It's like through E tickets.
Well, the tiering sort of does that, right? So in Epcot, right? Tier 1 is Soarin' Test Track, Living with the Land, which doesn't really count. And
that's a fake one.
Yeah. And Illuminations, right? So those, technically count, quote, more because you can only get one of them. But, they could say, Soarin' and Test Track, you get to choose one. Mission Space, Ellen's Energy Adventure, Spaceship Earth, you get to pick two. And then you could pick three of...
No, if you go on Ellen's Energy Adventure, you should get points. You get points back.
That's
you earn points during the day.
Yes, exactly.
Don't you think...
See, that's a good point system.
That's genius.
That is a good one. I like that.
You can
endure Ellen's Energy Adventure, and you might actually get to ride. Might get to ride Soarin'.
That's it. If you put up 45 minutes,
but that's great. They could send you to the disused parts of the park.
Yes,
and you can earn Fastpass points. You should patent this idea before you release this podcast because I think that's
Well, and what about if you own DVC? If you're an annual pass holder, you get a certain number of extra points. If you own DVC, they could really. They could make those member perks for DVC members too.
Here's the question I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've posed this question multiple times, and usually the answer is no. But do you think at any point in the future Disney is going to monetize the FastPass system and sell the ability to make more reservations or sell you a pack of reservations? Do you think that will ever happen?
I mean, indirectly, Will, I think they're going to tie it to the resort that you stay at. And I've seen documentation that says that. So I can't, you know, I think Disney's waiting for.
Oh, that's awful.
So if you stay at a, if you stay,
I don't know, dude. You know, there's a lot of things you pay for, you get more access to.
If you stay at a deluxe resort, you get more fast passes.
Yeah, so the stuff that I've seen.
So, and, was,
let Lynn talk.
Yes.
The stuff
Sorry,
that I've seen,
I got excited.
was this. And they could do it actually in a couple of different ways. And the sneaky thing is they could do it without you even knowing it. But imagine you're staying off-site, right? They can manipulate what you see on My Disney Experience so that you literally never see any of the mountains in the Magic Kingdom available, right? And as far as you know, it's not, right? But if you're staying at a value resort, you might be able to see one of them at any given time. And if you're staying at a moderate resort, you might see two. But if you're staying at a deluxe, you might be able to see all three.
Wow.
They could definitely do that. In fact, that's what I think will happen. I mean, and they won't announce
it. So
you
won't even really know that they're
doing it. You won't even know. It'll just be, hey, you know.
Damn, that's genius.
It's awful. It's the worst thing I've ever heard.
And I think,
I'd almost rather
I think,
have them tell me than
well,
so,
yeah, I'd rather know
about
too.
It'll,
you know, and you know, we'll all figure it out eventually.
You'll figure it out, and it'll be conventional wisdom, and they'll never have to acknowledge it. They'll say something like, you know, the supply of fast passes is constantly changing as we try and adjust, you know, capacity to meet guest demands.
Wow.
Thank you for calling Disney. Yeah, but I firmly believe that's going to happen. It'll get out that they might you know, do a test where they'll say, you know, if you book the Grand Floridian, we'll give you 5 fast pass choices instead of 3, you know, 60 days out.
I can easily see doing that as a promotion.
Yeah,
exactly. And why not?
Get more
right?
fast
I mean,
passes.
The only thing that really keeps them from doing it, I think, is the programming that goes on that actually drives fast passes so screwy that.
But don't you see that, like, eventually? I mean, I've heard so many different things, but do you see eventually it becoming a point where that you can get like 10 fast passes in a day and you can pre-book them all and it's going to be able to be in different parks?
Well, that's what the new VIP tour is, right? It's that you get a dozen thrill attractions or a dozen. It's $300
a person. The $299 one? Yeah.
Yeah. $300. Yeah, but so it's what? 40, wait, hold on. What is that? $25 a ride? Hmm. So worth it to you?
Ugh.
Not wait in line.
I hate when you
well,
break
actually,
it down
you still
like
have to
that.
Buy admission. That's the thing that killed me. That was it's $300, but tickets. You still had to buy tickets, park hopper tickets. Like, dude, seriously, for $300, you can't throw in the park
throw the
hopper
ticket
option.
In? Yeah,
yeah. So you know that was that. Yeah, but yeah. So, but the funny thing was, you guys remember when they did Year of a Million Dreams? Which, by the way, they could bring that back anytime
that.
They want.
That's what I say.
Everybody
loved
that
promotion.
My favorite promotion.
Well, it's so kind and generous and. You know,
the first
makes
time,
people
the first
feel
time
good.
I got
next to nothing.
I know. The first time I got fast passes, I literally hugged the cast member. I was so excited. I was walking out
and
of Peter Pan.
And it didn't have to be anything big. It's just, oh my God, I got something. This is awesome.
And the fast passes were like, dude, that's fantastic. But it was funny. In the fine print, because it was a giveaway, they had to put a monetary value on every single thing that they gave away. So everything from, you know, the free ice cream Mickey bar to all the way to a night at the Cinderella suite. Yep. They had to put a monetary value on it. They placed a monetary value of $5 on fast passes. So remember when they give you the card with one fast pass for every attraction in the park? That was worth, Disney claimed, $5. I'm like, I will buy them all right now for $5. You know, like, I will buy as many as you will sell me right now.
I will pay face value,
for $5. Yeah, I might even give you a premium just because, you know, they're in the bit. So, you know, but you know, and the funny thing was that, you know, we were talking to people about it, and there had, I guess it was some sort of accounting gimmick that they had to make it $5, because I was talking to Bob at the time. I'm like, you know damn well that if they were selling these things, they would not sell them for $5. It'd be 10 or 15 or something like that, right? It wouldn't be $5 for an entire day of fast passes. I mean, look at Universal Express over at Universal.
That's $100.
Yeah, on busy days, it can, you know, and that's per person.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So,
but you know what? That was where I thought Universal was a little bit genius, because I have people that will go and stay one night at Universal.
Oh yeah.
Just for that free express pass.
Yeah, you get an annual. It's like I have an annual pass, and it, you know, a room is half the cost with an annual pass.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so much. It's totally worth it.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't. In fact, if you're a family of four, it's actually cheaper to get the room than it is to buy four Universal Express passes.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, and you got to stay somewhere anyway, right? If you're staying overnight in Orlando.
You're
going
to pay for a hotel for the night. Why not just stay there?
Yeah. And when we did it, we stayed, you get the passes for 2 days just with one night. So you have the day and then you sleep and then the day you leave. So you get two days of early admission.
I thought that was kind of genius on Universal's part.
Yep.
It is.
And they made it just expensive enough to make it worth it.
Well, but the thing is, you get spoiled by... we did. We got spoiled by having the express passes at Universal. And then if you do get in a situation where you do without, maybe you're at Cabana Bay or you're just going in for the day, and you're like, wait, where's my express pass? Because I kind of went from the VIP pass, which is like super incredible, to the express pass. And I'm like, wait a minute, I have to wait 3 minutes?
Yeah, so, what is this?
It's
I do
hard.
Like Cabana Bay, though.
Yeah, it's easy to get spoiled. And so, it's addictive.
Hey, and then we'll get back to some questions. Can you go over, I guess, what touring plan is? Because we have some listeners that probably don't know about touring plans and what it does and what the advantages are and how you get a membership and all those types of things.
Sure. So we're an online Disney trip planning website, and we're subscription based. So just like if you want to subscribe to the New York Times or Consumer Reports online, it's a subscription. Depending on the discount you gets anywhere from $10 to $13 per year. But we have a bunch of online tools that will help you save time in line. That's sort of our goal. One of them is a crowd calendar, which will show you how busy each of the parks is going to be every day for the next year. So we'll actually get down into a fine-grained level of detail. And so we'll start off by telling you, okay, all of Walt Disney World is going to be, you know, a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10, and then we'll tell you what each park is going to be. And then if you want to drill down into more detail, we'll actually tell you in 5-minute increments what the wait time is going to be at every ride. So you can look at what happens if you get to the park at 9 a.m. versus 10 a.m. versus 11 a.m. The other thing that we have is touring plans. That's where the name of the website came from. And those are step-by-step itineraries that tell you the order in which you should ride rides to minimize your wait in line. This was the subject of my master's degree. I have a patent on it. It's the thing we're sort of famous for, but we'll save you between 4 and 5 hours in line on a busy day by figuring out, you know, where to go to avoid lines. We've got a complete set of Disney World menus with more than 20,000 food items. So we have literally every menu with prices and reviews of a lot of things too as well. So as we go through Disney World, whenever we're visiting and we're eating the food, we're also rating it as well. In fact, for Disneyland, we have a guy, his name is Guy. He's our on-site person for Disneyland. His job is to be in Disneyland every day. He's actually eaten every food item in every restaurant.
Wow.
And his cholesterol level is remarkably good still. It's amazing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And he's reviewed all them. So you can actually see for every menu, you can actually see what, you know, Guy's tasting notes are for each of those things. We've got, obviously we've got attraction descriptions of everything with YouTube videos. It's all completely sortable by age group. So if you've got preschoolers, you can see what the best rides are for preschoolers. We've got restaurant ratings done by a professional culinary expert. We've got room photos. Have you guys seen this on the site?
I've
seen them. Yes.
So we've got the view that you get from every room in Walt Disney World, more than 30,000 photos.
I actually do use that.
It's amazing.
I just did that for Grand Floridian for somebody.
Yeah, we're still working through some of the Grand Floridian.
From that.
Yeah, it works out really well. So if you say that you're staying at a, you know, two queen bedroom at Port Orleans Riverside, and you want to be within a 3-minute walk of the lobby, we'll show you not only all of the rooms that match those criteria, but we'll actually show you the view you get from those rooms. And it's important because a lot of the rooms, especially at the value resorts, like Pop Century or the All-Star Resorts, there are actually some rooms where the thing you see when you look through the window is either a giant green electrical box or your view is blocked by the icons that are attached to the side of the building and you literally can't see anything. And, you know, given that you're paying a premium for staying online, it's better that you, you're able to find a room that has a great view so that you see something nice when you wake up in the morning. Since you're paying for the room, you might as well ask for something that's nice. other mm-hmm. cool thing that we did with this is, and this is something we learned from Disney. Disney cooperated with us on this project, obviously, because we had 30,000 photos. But one of the things that we learned is their reservation system only has about 80 characters of text to hold room requests. So instead of writing like a 1 or 2 page letter, you know, that says, you know, I'm coming to Disney World with my family. It's our first trip, you know, yada, yada, yada. You only have like essentially one long sentence to describe to them what you want. So what we did on every page and for every room is we gave you the exact 80 characters of text to give to Disney to request that specific room and rooms like it. And that's important because...
Wow, that's you know, detailed.
I'll tell you what, I just did it for somebody who's traveling in July.
It works out really well. So, yeah. So the success rate on it is actually much higher than if you just wrote a letter. Again, the
it
reason
even
is...
It's like east-facing,
east-facing
right?
room, yeah. building 9, yeah, third yep. floor. Yeah, so if you... You know, if you find a room you like, but that particular room isn't available, you want to tell Disney what alternatives there are. So we actually give in this room request the alternate room numbers so that the people who are making these requests can say, okay, is 9408 available? No. Okay, well, they also could fit in, you know, 9410, 9412, 9414, and one of them will be available. So that really helps your chances of getting the room you want. Again, the earlier you put in those requests, the better. You know, a week out is good. But yeah, we've heard from a lot of people who get the exact room, and we've heard from people inside Disney, the people who are actually processing these requests, who say it's a lot easier to read that than it is to scan through a 2-page fax, you know, that describes you know their entire trip in detail, because they get hundreds of those a day. They've got about 10 seconds to sort of skim and figure out what you want. So being as succinct as possible is really important. And finally, the last thing we have lines are in park mobile app. It's the highest rated Disney World app in both iTunes and Android Google Play Android market. So we'll tell you not only what the waits are in the posted waits are for every park in Disney World and Disneyland and Universal, but we'll tell you how long you'll actually wait in line as well, because we know Disney manipulates the wait times. And again, you can get your touring plans on there, and you can optimize it on the fly. So if things change in the parks, you can get an updated itinerary while you're in the park. That's super cool. Menus, everything like that. So,
yeah. And I don't know. For some reason, people don't think about it, I don't know why, but if you're spending thousands of dollars on your vacation, spend the extra $13. Go sign up for touring plans and save. It's definitely worth it, because you're spending all this money on your vacation, and now you can save time and actually enjoy the rides and plan it all out.
Yeah. The saving 4 hours in line is really important. I try and relate to people like this. Because, see, I mean, $12 or $13 is still $12 or $13. But if you break it down by day, it essentially works out to roughly 75 cents per person per day for a family of four on a 4-day trip, right? And we'll save you 4 hours in line, you know, per day. So the way that I usually phrase this is the opposite. Like, if I give you 75 cents, will you know, per person in your family, will you take your family outside and stand in the sun for me for 4 hours? Will you do that for me? Because if you will, I'll give you the $3 right now, and you know, we'll go have some fun. But no one would ever accept that deal, right? Could you imagine trying to convince your spouse to go stand in line for in the sun for 4 hours for $3? It'd never happen.
No.
So that's sort of how I like to think of this.
Very cool. And I'll put on the show notes. I'll put in the show notes how to get to touring plans and have a link and all that in there for everybody.
Oh, so finally, the last thing we have, a ticket calculator. So you guys know that there are third-party companies that sell tickets, and they're legit, right? They sell Disney tickets at a discount. But it's a very competitive market, and the prices change pretty frequently. One of the things we have on the site is what we call the least expensive ticket calculator. If you tell us how many people are going, like how many adults and how many kids, and what ticket options you want, we actually search all the major vendors, including Disney, every day, and we'll tell you for any combination of tickets who has the least the cheapest tickets, including tax and shipping. No one does that, including Disney. They typically add tax and shipping at the very end.
You guys are busy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How do you keep up with all this?
Well, so the ticket companies actually work with us and tell us when they're updating prices, which is pretty cool. But the other thing that the ticket calculator does is it knows that if you only want to visit, it knows like all the little tricks with the tickets. So if you only want to visit one theme park one time, it won't recommend a water park Fun and More for you because it knows that it's cheaper to buy the single day admission to the theme parks. So it'll actually tell you that. And then it'll tell you where to buy the water park ticket to save the most money, even if it means buying your water park ticket from one company and your theme park ticket from another.
Very cool.
It's wow. Yeah. So the average family saves between $27 and $81 on their trip, wow, just for that. I know, right? Yeah.
Chris, did you have any final questions? Or did you go through?
I do. I have a good one.
All right.
Oh, cool. Well,
all right. This comes from Jesse, and Jesse is like, he's like our honorary Dorothy Spornak of the Mouse Chat listeners. If you ever watch Golden Girls, I'm teasing. That's a private
really
joke between me and
a good description of him.
Isn't he? But Jesse is the most awesome kid anywhere. And he's also a huge Len Testa and Jim Hill fan. And so,
oh, awesome.
He writes, yeah, he loves your podcast. He said, I said, what do you think about it? And he said, my only complaint is that they don't do enough shows. So anyway, he's a big fan.
When
so Jesse writes, what's that?
When came out today?
Oh, okay. I'm sure you know what? I'm sure he knows that too. Jesse writes, is Jim Hill as cuddly as in person as he seems on the Disney Dish podcast?
Is he as what?
Is he as cuddly in person? I think he's being sarcastic.
Is this your own question, Chris?
It's his question.
This must be your own.
It's funny because Jim is hysterical. Even in person, when you can see him, there are these facial expressions that he uses with stuff, you know, and he uses his hands to talk. None of it comes through on the podcast, but in person, it's just hysterical. I actually met him because he was doing an in-park tour of the Animal Kingdom back before Disney kicked him out or prevented him from doing this. But I followed along, and it was hysterical. And that's how we met. I'd read his site and everything, but he's even funnier in person. We're actually doing a live show in.
We had him on.
Yeah, he just told us about that.
Yeah, in August 16th in. Yep.
You're going to Flushing Meadows.
Yeah, yep. World's Fair.
I'll
so,
be,
oh, that's right.
I fly in Steve. August 16th. I actually fly there on the 16th.
And you should come by. We're going to do it in the afternoon. It'll be a lot of fun.
I'm there.
Jim's already invited Steve. I think he might have kicked you out. I'm not sure.
Well, I fly in August 16th, and then I leave on the 29th.
Tons of time. There's nothing else to see in New York. Trust me. I've been there.
And I'm out there every day because I'm out at the tennis. I'm out at the U.S. Open Tennis Center, which is at Flushing Meadows.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping to sort of like, sponge off other people going out to Flushing Meadows for that. Like,
you just
hopefully
take,
some people will get drunk
Steve
and get lost.
Tickets.
Just take the number 7 all the way out.
I've tried that. He doesn't give them to me.
I've heard it was the number 7. That's Jim has already warned me. Take the number 7 out. And
you just go all the way. It takes you right out there. It's about 45 minutes from Grand Central, and it's straight. Yeah, it's a lot of it's interesting to see all that stuff. We were talking to Jim last week about it because it's like they just got up and left, and there's a lot of the stuff that's just still sitting there.
That's awesome. And, yeah, I think. But there's a lot of a lot of what Disney learned about theme parks came from those things. So
you can see in the granite around the Unisphere where it has all of the attractions like engraved and. And you can see Spaceship Earth, like where the idea for that is, the monorails, where the idea from that is. It looks like a future plan for Epcot, all sketched out right there from
64, 65, yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing how massive it is if you ever watch the videos, because you're like, they built this huge thing for just 2 years. These massive buildings and all these attractions, and now they built Epcot, and it's been there forever, and they haven't updated some of those attractions ever.
It's been a long time, yeah.
So, but yeah, it's amazing how big all those buildings were and how cool everything was. But you can still see a lot of it sitting around.
I'm excited. So we'll have a nice talk. We'll talk about the World's Fair, the subsequent influence of that on Disney's thinking. It should be a lot of fun.
Very cool.
I have more. Well, okay. So some of these. Well, okay. We don't want to wear Len out because we know that he's wildly popular and probably has like 5 other podcasts to do tonight. But if you have time, Jonathan Pop asked, did removing the SoCal annual pass have a definitive impact on crowd levels? I think that's interesting.
Oh, You know, we're actually updating the crowd calendar for Disneyland next week. So my sense is yes. By the way, my statistician told us that the studios for December 27th is now an 8. So let's update.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'll write her back. Thank you. Wow, that's service. Thank you.
It'll be in tomorrow's update. So yeah, but
she's going to be unhappy.
Yeah, I know, but it's more realistic. So
I know, but like it's pretty cool.
It's higher. The difference between 4 and an 8 isn't as great as 4 to 10. So, but going back to Southern California, good.
Oh no, go ahead.
Southern California, Disney's doing interesting things there. It's almost like they've got this love-hate relationship with their annual pass holders. It's like, we love the money you're bringing into us, but Jesus, stay out of the parks, will you? You're screwing it up for everyone else.
It's awesome how they ask. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Good.
It's awesome how they ask, do you have a pass? Do you have a pass? Do you have a pass? Yeah, no matter what you do. Cool.
Yeah. And the food there is so much cheaper because you can literally walk outside, go to Denny's and then walk back in the park. That, you can get a decent breakfast there for $15 a person, whereas in the, the Magic Kingdom, it's $25. And that's solely because you've got no other options.
Yeah.
But
but you get that. Is that why they give pass holders so many good discounts there?
Yeah, they know that you're going to come back over and over again, and you spend a lot of time in the parks. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, World will never do that.
No.
But yeah. So I think it'll push down crowds a little bit. But the thing that we saw with the thing that I think that Disney did that's genius in Disneyland. They do it in World too, is they went to that monthly installment plan for the annual passes. So rather than having to pony up, $600 or $700 for an annual pass, it's $35 a month or whatever, plus a down payment. And I think that allowed them to get rid of the Southern California pass and move people into the more expensive pass with fewer blackout dates, because of the monthly installment.
And it's not just, $600 or $700 a person. When you get it for more than one person, that's a lot of money. Family of four.
Dude, we're buying annual passes for 12 people a year. Yeah, I get it.
Oof.
We actually looked at we actually looked at Club 33 before they did the price increase, because you get a certain number of annual passes with Club 33. And the way we looked at it in 2012, right before they did the cost increase, and it was $10,000 at the time, but you got 8 annual passes, something like that, or 10 annual passes, something crazy. And we're like, dude, I can totally justify it on that. And they went and raised the price to $40,000 for a Club 33 membership. And, wow. And it didn't make sense then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, they can raise prices and they can do things to the Disneyland people because of the monthly installment plan, and people will pay it. So, well, I think they should make it $1,000 and be done with it.
I think they're going to keep raising prices until people start saying no.
I've heard that they want to get fewer annual pass holders in Disneyland because they're trying to make it into more of a tourist destination. And then there are instances where the locals will, flood the park so much that the people who are staying in the hotels and eating full meals in the restaurants are being inconvenienced by it. So, the annual pass holders will show up on a Friday night, walk into the park, literally not go on a ride, or maybe go on, one or two rides, but not buy anything either. They'll just stand in the park.
Yeah.
Meet friends, and it's a social thing, right? It's like going to the mall.
Yeah, or they go to Trader Sam's and hang out all night.
Exactly. Yeah, but that means that, people who are there on a, once-in-a-lifetime vacation, can't get into Trader Sam's.
Yep.
Right? Disney's trying to make sure that the people who are spending the most money get the most happiness, I guess. That's the thing to look at. So I wouldn't be surprised if they started restricting that more. Do you guys see that they reconnected the Radiator Springs Racers fast pass machines to the rest of the park? I think this is another step in not making it easier for the locals.
So what are they doing?
So it used to be you could get a Radiator Springs fast pass immediately first thing of the day and then go get another fast pass for something else.
Oh.
But now you can't do that anymore. And so it disadvantages locals who only wanted to ride that, because it means you pretty much have to stay in the park all day. Once you get that Radiator Springs Racers fast pass, you can't get another one for 2 hours or whatever. And so your strategy for FastPass Plus in the park changes to the point where you pretty much have to be there all day if you want to ride the headliner rides. And that's not what locals do, but it is what people on vacation do.
Yep.
So you're seeing all these little changes that they're making to at the expense of locals in favor of people who are, you know, staying in the parks and all day and staying in the hotels.
Yeah, and they are definitely filling up the parks. We looked at, because we were thinking of going this month later in July, and there's...
Why would you go to Southern California in July?
I know.
Is Orlando not warm enough for you?
That's a whole other show. But
I was actually in Palm Springs in August last year, and it was 120.
Oh, yeah.
But Palm Springs is beautiful. Anyway, go ahead.
I would officially die.
Yeah, but from July through December...
Well, Steve will be... Yes. Driving through the desert.
Yeah, it's a long.
In a 30-year-old car.
It's a long story. So we're supposed to go. We're supposed to be over there for 10 days, but they have no agent discounts for July through December, and no agent rate and no agent tickets available for July through December. So, which means that they definitely are, you know, expecting large crowds already for the hotels and the parks.
They've only got to three hotels, you know, I think Paradise Pier probably needs a refurb again, but they're not, you know, yeah, I know, right? But you know, they could probably build another hotel. It's just the real estate prices; they're boxed in right there. They'd have to, I guess, they could get rid of one of the parking lots and build up again. I think that's probably their next move.
I really think they could do a lot more with the property at Paradise Pier than what's currently sitting on it. It stems because Disney did not design the property.
Yeah.
It is not maximized. I really do think that hotel could easily say goodbye, and they could really far. But I'm always infinitely interested in the business side of Disney because they always make decisions that the rest of the world's like, what are you doing? And it turns out to make them billions of dollars. So anyway, but you know, that's the opinion on Paradise Pier.
Yeah. The interior, the rooms themselves are just, they're not great. I mean, they're nothing like the Disneyland hotel, but they're also nothing like the Grand California. It's almost like we wanted to make this a value. We wanted to make this a moderate. We weren't sure. We didn't want to put much money in it. The showers are weird. I mean, I'm not a tall person. I'm eye level with the shower head.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, it's strange. So, yeah.
And I really found it weird that the inside of the shower head like moves with water pressure.
I know, so right?
Yeah, that's weird.
It's kind of like you're going through a car wash, and you're like, a little rotating thing. So bizarre. I'm like some shower head salesman like thought of this like some late night, and like bam, there it is. Disney bought the rotating shower head. It's like, yeah. Can I get a wax down here? Yeah. Can I get a clear coat? Can I get a clear coat protector? Yeah. The Disney car wash.
First time I was in the shower, I had flown in to LA, and my flight was late. I ended up getting in at like 4 a.m. and had to be up at 7 to be in the park at 8. And I remember getting in the shower at 7. And you know, like after when you're sleep deprived, like your head hurts, you're hot all over. And I remember just trying to wrap my head around the fact that I'm in the shower, that the water was moving, and I'm like, am I dizzy? And I reached out to the wall to like steady myself. I'm like, no, I'm not moving. The shower's moving. I'm thinking to myself, who would put this in a shower and why?
Yeah.
So funny. So funny. This could be one of those days.
The intricacies of Disney.
Oh, funny.
Okay. Angie also asks, do you follow a touring plan if you go in September when there are lower crowds? Or really, I guess any month that it's lower crowds.
You know, I usually do in the morning. I'll have a general idea of what I want to see, like first four or five attractions, maybe six. And the reason is, you know, once you get the bottlenecks out of the way, the rest of the day is usually clear sailing, especially like in the Animal Kingdom and the studios where there's only a handful of attractions. Same thing in Epcot, really. Once you get through Future World, you know, in the morning, there's only two ways to tour World Showcase, really, clockwise and counterclockwise. But yeah, I generally have a plan for the first six rides. And what I'll tell my family is, like, especially Hannah, my daughter, look, I know you don't want to do a touring plan. And sometimes she's bringing people who've never been before. But I'm like, you don't want to wait in line. We'll bear with me for the first few hours. We'll see everything you want to see, I guarantee it. But let me do it this way. And then everyone's fine after that. You know, then we can relax and do whatever. It's not like I need to get on, you know, Space Mountain again. So if I don't catch it this trip, I can always catch it the next one.
I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this week's show. I, of course, would like to thank Len Testa for joining us. If you wanted to get more information on Touring Plans, you can go to touringplans.com. Don't forget to get the latest edition of the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World. And, Len, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I would like to also thank pixievacations.com for sponsoring the podcast. If you have any questions or comments for us, please write to us at comments@mousechat.net. If you enjoy our shows, you can download them at iTunes or also at mousechat.net. Please join us again next time on Mouse Chat.